if they ever want to bring back petrol for some reason, change their mind. Hey, like the Atkins diet, you know, the founder of the Atkins diet, he used to say meat and potatoes for years, and then all of a sudden carbohydrates and meat are bad, and you got to do this, that, and the other. If one day it's natural gas, 2 weeks from now it's petrol, it doesn't matter. They've got control of the resources. That's what this is about. Okay, because if Bill Gates is standing at the World Economic Forum pitching his friends asking for money, then it's not about money. It's about the representation behind the money, and that's power. You can't ever have enough power. Ask the people who are in power. It does something psychologically to their brain. It makes them all sparkly. And it takes a certain caliber, and I use that word lightly, of person to obtain that level of power. They genuinely think that they're doing the right thing because they think like a CEO. And we don't think like a CEO. So we don't understand when they speak how they could possibly. Bill Gates, for an example, let's pick on him again. Bill Gates will go into Pakistan and inoculate and be part of inoculation initiatives with Gavi that end up murdering 47,000 children. Not 4,700, 47,000 children. And he goes home and kisses his wife and his kids goodnight. And he thinks he did okay. Because to him, those people are taking up resources, and those resources are not being monetized correctly if they're being wasted on those people. So the less people there are, the more he has to monetize. That's how they're thinking. And it's sick. It's absolutely disgusting. I have two small children. It's sick, but that's how they think. And if we understand that, then we understand when they're pitching us because that's where they're coming from. You know, Max Egan in
It's like that old saying, the greatest trick the devil ever pulled was convincing humanity he didn't exist. I think the greatest trick marketers ever pulled is convincing people that they're not being marketed to.
Exactly. An idea whose time has come. Okay. Yes, absolutely. An idea comes. If you think of something, technically that statement is true. What you attach to it emotionally is your own business. But if it's advantageous for them, then you're a lifetime customer. If you look at the Snickers ad in the magazine and go and buy the Snickers, then you're a lifetime customer. If you watched or participated in any way in that debacle with Duck Dynasty, then you are still a customer. And you know what? It's okay. Because they're speaking to our base need, our base emotions, our need to survive, our want to be famous. Everybody can be famous now. You can get on a reality show. They've got them in all sorts of shapes and sizes and plot lines. And you too can have your 15 minutes of fame. And that makes you feel good because it's an accomplishment. You have done what these guys that you look up to do every single day. It's like you're part of their world now. Now you're hooked. Now you're going to pay attention to everything your favorite actor or actress or musician does. You're going to wear their clothes. If they put out a brand, you're going to buy it. You're going to do everything they say. If they tell you not to text and drive, not that it's not a bad thing, you should be paying attention to the road. But when Tim McGraw comes out and tells his audience not to text and drive. That's marketing. When we look at Miley Cyrus and we say, oh God, and there's all this stuff going on around it, and there's all these swirling ideas of and theories and postulations about what's going on. Remember, I said that they never show weakness unless it's advantageous to the pitch, to the sale. Nothing that we know about isn't something that they don't want us to know. Everything fits in. It's a puzzle piece. Everything marches toward a directed goal. If you step back and take your emotions out of it, you can see it step by step by step. Now, it's advantageous to some people to sensationalize what's going on in our world. because it creates new markets, it creates new opportunities to earn money. And that's what these people are trying to do. They're trying to protect their lifestyle that they've become accustomed to. That in itself is not inherently wrong. How you get there is questionable. So when you look up at these celebrities and you do what they say and you regurgitate something that even it sounds so ridiculous. Let me give you an example of another example of the pitch in media. I was listening to a gentleman who, and I won't mention his name, was speaking about the banker suicides. And Vinny, did you hear about these?
Actually, somebody sent me a text message to tell me about all of these, but I didn't see no articles or anything like that. Apparently, somebody committed suicide by shooting him half a dozen times in the head with a nail gun on one side of his head, and then half a dozen times on the other side of his head, and then it was ruled a suicide. You know,
yes,
you could think of more effective ways to kill yourself, and maybe if you're a qualified banker, you'd come up with something perhaps a little less, I don't know, obviously murder.
Yes, but it doesn't matter. It's sensational. It's an open-ended question. You can fill in the blank. A lot of people have filled in the blanks. And one person that I heard filling in the blanks, which I thought was very fascinating because I've seen this person speak a lot. You know, they have a television show and they have a radio show. And I had never heard them pitching the audience before. But then again, I wasn't aware of this information. So how could I? If they're constantly putting us in the spell of fight or flight, of rage, or telling us, you know, hey, it's okay, go ahead and have a beer or, you know, whatever other drug you want. They're giving you permission to take a breather from all of the fight and flight and all of the scare tactics that they're using, giving you permission to just relax for a minute before they start scaring the crap out of you again. I'd never heard the pitch in media until I sat down and listened to this person. And so I started to hear it more and more. And it was amazing to me, but this was the kicker, okay? This gentleman says, regarding the suicides, that there is no correlation to this at all. There's no connection to it at all. However, there have been questionable suicides of bankers recently. Well, right off the bat, the guy is telling you he's making this up. This is his opinion because there's no correlation. There's no tying what he's about to say to what he's going to then explain to you as if it's an authoritative figure, as if he's speaking from a place of authority. And so he goes on to talk about how in news reports, the 4 to 5 bankers had passed away under questionable circumstances. And then there were these other reports, which bumps the number up to 20. Well, there you go. Either it's tabloid journalism or it's not. Either it's true or it's not. You can't have it both ways. So there are credible reports that say only 4 to 5 bankers passed away. And then there are other reports which arbitrarily bump the number up to 20 by taking the incredible information and mixing it in with the evidentiary information that lends credibility to the information that was not credible. Because in the mind of the listener, they attach the good information with the bad information in their mind. This is all happening in your mind because that's where you make your decisions. That's where the emotions flood your brain with all of the chemicals, and then you make a decision in your frontal lobe. The host of the show goes on to say that he has no idea if this is true, but he's racked his brain and he's come up with 2 options as to why the bankers killed themselves. One of them is that they're sick of working for Lloyd Blankfein. How close any of these bankers were to Lloyd Blankfein, I don't know. And no evidence of them being close to him, sitting next to him in a board meeting or personally text messaging him while they were eating lunch or hanging out with his wife and kids in Martha's Vineyard. No information about that, just an assumption, just an allegation. But because this person holds a semblance of authority that the audience has given him because he told them that he was an authority and they believed him, he can say whatever he wants. And that's how it works. Then the truth becomes inconsequential. And you know what the byproduct of that is? Poor decision making. We don't make good decisions. We make decisions based on how we feel. We make decisions based on bad information that was given to us to conjure a specific emotion.
You know, it's interesting because there was a guy asking me, what do you do once you find out about all this stuff? And I was like, well, it's like a 3 or 4 step process. I can't remember exactly what I said, but it was like step one is just dealing with the fact that you know this stuff. Secondly is finding out how you can make a difference. And thirdly, it's actually making a difference. I think that's the 4 steps, you know. First of all, you learn the information, then learn how to deal with it, then learn to make a difference, then make a difference. Okay? And I think making a difference is the pinnacle anybody can achieve in their life, particularly if you're trying to save the world and humanity from scumbaggery.
Here's how you can make a difference. The next time you see a picture of a candy bar, acknowledge that you're hungry and go find something healthy to eat. And you can program your brain to every time you see that candy bar, you'll think of a carrot stick. That's not bad programming. It actually helps your body.
Indeed. I was explaining to somebody the other day how Alex Jones' wife quit smoking. And she put all like a week's worth of cigarette butts in a bowl or something like that. Maybe a jar with a resealable lid, and every time she felt like a cigarette, she'd go and she'd sniff the jar because it got a little bit of water in it as well, and it just reeks real bad. So what it did to her brain, and I think this, or at least this is what I think happens, is that your brain then negatively associates your cravings and destroys those cravings.
Your brain will create some synapse relationships with different areas of the brain if you use that often. If you don't, the relationship dies. So what they're constantly keeping us in is a state of relationship in our brain where we are using the same synapse and we are having the same emotions. New information conjure up the same emotions. That's why when you hear a song or when you smell a smell, bam, you are right back at summer camp, or you're right back sitting next to your first love, or you're right back sitting in your fourth grade classroom. It's uncanny how we can transcend this reality and actually feel like we're sitting right there in the past just by a smell or a sound. But this is how we are affected. That's why music is so effectual. That's why they play music in the background of all of your shows and all your movies. I always wished that life had a soundtrack. Wouldn't that be great? If life, it would at least warn you. You know, if you're in the water, you would hear that, dun-it, dun-it, dun-it. You would know to get out of the water.
That would actually be quite amusing, you know. Imagine what the soundtrack would be when you walk into like a political rally or something like that full of your political opponents, you know. It'd be like Limp Bizkit or something.
Well,
Mission Impossible theme or Break Stuff, one of those tracks, you know.
Yeah, I thought this was interesting. About a year ago, I met this woman who used to do the jazz circuit in Seattle. And she was on cruise ships for a while, and she met a lot of great jazz musicians. And I got to meet a couple of them through her and have lunch. And I sat at a jam session, and they were playing jazz music. And I'll tell you, folks, I've never heard this music before in my life. This is not jazz. It isn't even that wacky Miles Davis stuff with Bitches Brew. And I've never understood that album. I've listened to it several times, at least 20 or 30 times, honestly, folks. And I just don't get it. It's too chaotic for me. But this music, this new jazz music that obviously is not new, it's just never been heard by the general public. Because when the powers that be in the music industry started noticing that people were going to jazz clubs before they were called jazz clubs, they sat down and listened to this music. And then they took it back with them. And they focus grouped the hell out of it. And they rebranded and repackaged and found some people to be the new spokespeople for this new brand of music. And then put it out there for the audience to listen to. And jazz music for some people is very jarring. They just don't agree with it, don't understand it. But it does resonate with a certain sect of people. And for their entire life, they are jazz fans. And they've got lifetime customers. The point of the story is, by the time you see it, or hear it, or taste it, or participate in it, it's not real. It's a manufactured version of it. And if we understand that, then we're going to take a look at what's happening in the Ukraine and see that this is foreign policy going on right now. And there are factions in there, the US and the EU and Russia, and the people are in the middle of it. And there are good, honest people. Good, honest people who want freedom, who are the fodder, and the good people who are doing bad things. Because they don't realize that they're participating in their own tyranny. They don't realize that there are stability operations the day after the revolution. They don't realize that there's a transitional council or an individual patsy like Mohamed Morsi over in Egypt. They don't see that right now because they are pumped up high on that adrenaline. They are looking for their savior and they are finding it in this movement. So the product that is being sold to us now is freedom. And it's the ultimate product because it has everything. It touches every single aspect of our life because it's the one thing that we've seen being taken from us. Now, who do we blame on this? Because in a storyline, there's always a good guy and a bad guy, even if the good guy is an anti-hero, you know, like in the Despicable Me movies, where he's obviously a bad guy, but you go ahead and root for him because he loves the children. So he can't be all bad. We take this mythology, you know, Joseph Campbell talked about the hero with 1,000 faces. We take this mythological idea, the fist, the pots and pans, the roses handed out to the police who are blocking the protesters, the image of this poor woman who in Seattle, part of Occupy Wall Street, 85-year-old woman, I think, 82, sprayed in the face with mace. In fact, the police officer emptied an entire can of mace into this old woman's face, and they took pictures of her and put it all over the internet. Why? Because it's emotional. Why did they put this little video out about I am Ukraine, this beautiful woman? Because it's emotional. Because it touches you. Because they know that it's going to have one of two results. It's either going to, the people who see it, it's either going to incite them to act upon what they're seeing and identify with it and say, yeah, I want that. Or it's going to turn people away and say, I know that things are bad, but we do not have to have that kind of trouble. Everybody's wondering where the police state is. Police state was supposed to have already come down. They were supposed to enact martial law already. What are they waiting for? People don't understand that they're waiting for the grand finale of the product that they're selling. They're waiting for the day after the revolution so they can install the stability operations. They do it in every country. Here in the United States, it's not going to be any different. They don't, and they can't. They cannot lock everyone down. There's 325 million people in the United States, respectively. And there's no way. even with the civilian army that they're putting together, even with the non-federalized police force, sending some of the people from the police departments all across the country to these non-federalized camps where they're being trained in military tactical operations and then sent back. And in exchange, FEMA is giving them all of those lovely gear that they've got, and the armored trucks and the LRADs, and more money for more toys that are really, really creepy and scary to us. It's for the stability operations the day after, because we're participating in a fight. We're not participating in our freedom. All across the world, they have gotten good, wonderful people who are genuinely disenfranchised, and they have every right to be, because they've been treated like dirt by their country, by the people who run it, by their leaders. Some of them elected, some of them usurped. Doesn't matter. They live under that tyranny, and it's horrible. And it's a lot worse than it is in the United States, and we're complaining. And I'm not saying that we shouldn't be. But how we complain is being directed, just like it's been directed all over the globe. And it started with Optor, and it started with Democracy, From Dictatorship to Democracy, Gene Sharp's book, 198 Ways to Topple Your Government Using Nonviolent Resistance. And it has been replicated by the IRI all over the world. And it is extremely successful. Because nobody would think that it is the other guys who have set this whole thing up. Now, the Ukraine being strategic is a big deal. The port and the export of petroleum and natural gas so that they can export that to the global markets, that's a huge deal. Like I said, internationally, everybody's moving toward natural gas. Well, guess what? Russia is assumed to have the largest amount of natural resources we could dig up from the earth ever. Most of it is untapped and untouched. Now, they have the monetary backing and through that military backing of the Chinese government through their relationship with the BRICS nations. See, they've been setting this up for the last couple of years. They had their fifth summit last year. 5 years ago, China, Brazil, South Africa, Russia, and Chile got together and decided that they were going to set up their own version of a New World Order. It's slightly different than the technocratic New World Order, but it's New World Order nonetheless. You just get a little bit more freedom, get a little bit more laxed with the options you have as far as energy goes and some of the abilities that you might have. But it is absolutely New World Order. It's not pretty. I don't like it either. So you've got these two groups fighting with each other. Now, in order to take over a country in the past, they would invade. They would just get everybody together, get all their troops together, set out a plan, crack open a couple of books, get everything ready, and go over and invade. They don't do that anymore. They don't have to. Nobody has to know that there's a war going on. All they do is they go into that country with their little feelers and their little questionnaires and their little stability operations. You know, there's a group that was set up by Hillary Clinton within the State Department, and their task simply is to gather intelligence in Syria. They have been successful in helping the Syrian Free Army in destroying that country and murdering people. And they've done it through questionnaires. And they did it through interviews with local members of government and citizens. Does that sound familiar to you? It should. Because they use the same tactics over and over again.
Have you noticed that we keep falling for them? Oh, when I say we, I mean the royal we, not me and you specifically. But yeah.
No, you and I are not immune to this. They are talking about base needs. You know, I opened the broadcast by saying when I looked at that Snickers bar, my stomach growled. I didn't eat the Snickers bar. I laughed because it's so effective. Because what they talk to is not us. They talk to our emotions. And most of us don't have our emotions in check. We're reacting all over the place. We react on social media. We react to our friends. If something happens and we're having a good day, and then all of a sudden something else happens and we don't get what we want, then we start being mean to the people we were just having a good time with. And we push those people around, either physically or emotionally. Because we don't have our emotions in check. And everything we do is based on emotion. And they've got all of these wonderful drugs to take away the emotion. Remember the symptoms? You know, NyQuil, when you watch the commercial, it says that they take care of this symptom, and this symptom. They never say that they take care of the cold. Because if the symptoms go away, you think the problem is gone. It's not just that they stop reporting about something in the news. It's that everything in the news is strategic. I saw an article today in alternative media about a gentleman who made a comment that was purely designed to incite a reaction. And it was pure propaganda. And to be honest with you, I don't know why the author even wasted their time, because the journalist who wrote that article is a very, very brilliant person. I know him personally. But we don't understand what's important in our world. We don't understand that the propaganda is what feeds the machine. And every time we report on something that he said and she said, and every time we make the Republicans angry at the Democrats and the Democrats angry at the Republicans, and they're all picking on the libertarians and they're all poo-pooing on the right wings, and this tinfoil hat wearing guys aren't even paying attention in the background. They're looking up, waiting for Nibiru. We're all segregated and we're all fighting each other, and we're not paying attention that we are fighting something that doesn't even exist. It is an idea of something else or someone else that is not based on reality. It's based on topical, superficial information. And because we are reacting, we know that we are under the spell of the Hegelian dialectic. So if we take a step back and take our emotions out of it and maybe sleep on it, you know, not everything has to be decided all at once. Trust me, the world's not coming to an end. They need the world to be here. They're not trying to obliterate it. They're trying to perfect it to their own liking. There's a huge difference. It's offensive to you and me because I don't like their designs. I've seen their designs and I don't like it. I don't think that my family of four would feel comfortable in an Agenda 21 shoebox that will just turn lights on and off at will because they decided that I didn't have enough credits on my card.
How exactly can we relinquish the controls of the system? And here's the real problem, is that they're using our own minds to control us. That's actually what's really frightening about it, is that they know our own minds almost as well, if not better than we do. They know how to know what makes us tick. I cannot fathom a more dangerous enemy.
Yes. They know that we're upset and we want our rights back. So they come up with this scheme and say, hey, if you feel the way I do, and I'm sure that you would agree, and yes, we can all agree that things are bad. See, there's the pitch right there. There's the pitch. Why? Where's the pitch? I'll show you. If you agree to one thing, you're more likely to agree with the other things that they have to say. And the other things they have to say is what they're actually pitching you. But if you are in accord with them, then you're on that loop. Remember the infinity sign on its side? Loop you around. You agree, buy my product. You disagree, they loop you around. You agree, buy my product. They want you to do this stupid thing that has never worked. The only thing that it's done is laid a waste and a clear pathway for another country to take over. That's what these fake revolutions do. It is the blueprint every single time. It's in the history books. It's online. Go look it up. Every time they install a fake revolution, the Patsy comes in, the stability operations come in, and all of a sudden the IMF and the World Bank step in. And they fund the rehabilitation of that country. They pour billions of dollars into the infrastructure to build that country back up. Why? Because it's part of it. They figured out that they can get whatever they want. And they'll use you to get it. And it's brilliant, because how would you say no? Is anyone going to say no to a constitutional republic here in the United States? No.
Actually, currently they have kind of... No. How about Barack Obama? How about the entire Congress? How about every single senator? How about every single senator? How about every single governor? How about every single freaking person who attends public education and doesn't think that it's BS?
You got a real good point there. I had to qualify.
I rest my case.
You're absolutely right. On the lower end, the new middle class and lower, which is all of us listening, and you and me talking. We all want our rights back. The funny thing is, we never lost them. That's the brilliance. The brilliance is we never lost them, folks. Guess what? You always had the right to hang up the phone. You always had the right to hang up the phone. And what do I mean by that? What I mean when I say you've always had the right to hang up the phone, it means you always had the right not to participate. You always had the right to say, wait a minute, I'm emotional about this, and I don't feel comfortable. Let me think about it. Let me sleep on it. Let me talk to my wife. Let me talk to my friends. It's okay to get advice. It's okay to think, because, folks, we have this idea, and I mentioned this earlier, so I'm going to bring it back up. We have this idea that consequences are bad. Consequences are not bad. In fact, Bill Gates at the World Economic Forum was setting up situations where he would have multiple consequences. Why? Because there's no such thing as bad press. That's what the Wolf of Wall Street learned. There's no such thing as bad press. That's what Bill Gates has learned. It was all over, all media. And I hate to break it to you guys, but the mainstream reported on it as well. When 47,000 children died in Pakistan. Absolutely. It's a big deal. Teflon Bill Gates, he's still walking around with his hands in his pocket whistling down the street. Nobody's pointing a finger. There's no indictment. Never going to be. He can get away with it. You and I are disenfranchised. We're looking for an answer. We're looking for a solution. And we're at the point now where we'll take anything. We don't have a very high opinion of ourselves as a group. We have very, very low self-esteem. We accept very, very little. And we are simply begging for the little bit that we have. Please don't take it away. If they still have their home, please don't take my home away. If they still have their job, I hate my job. Please just don't take it away. I have a family to support. I got to have this job. When we're in that state, we don't realize that we're protesting for things that we own. We have. We never lost. Because we always had the right to hang up the phone. We always had the choice not to participate. If you don't like GMO, don't buy it. Period. If you buy it, then you don't have a problem with it. You can make any excuse that you want for why you eat it. But the fact of the matter is, if you're doing something that you know is wrong and you're doing it anyway, you're okay with it. You've accepted that that is part of that's maybe one of lesser evils that you've told yourself. You know, internet trolls are kind of funny because they are rebels. And sometimes they do really good things. I've seen people come into common threads who are called trolls, and not that they don't fit that bill, but I've seen some people come into common threads and point out really good, really logical thought process in such a short amount of words and then get completely jumped on by everyone else in the thread. And it's kind of funny because when someone makes sense, even if they're a troll, then everyone else turns around and facilitates the other part of that conversation. See, if you're having a conversation with someone and they're complaining about something and you're telling them, oh, don't worry about it, it'll be okay. And then you stop and think about what they're saying and you start to feel how they feel. Well, yeah, maybe what just happened to us isn't okay. And so you start to complain about it. They'll pick up the other role, the one you left behind. They'll start telling you it's okay. Don't worry about it. And we see this going on back and forth in these common threads because everyone is expounding on their belief. Their belief is based on how they feel about themselves. And since we all have this problem of low self-esteem, we don't think very highly of ourselves. We've accepted less than we know is acceptable to us individually. We've accepted a smaller car or a smaller home or no vacation or buying at secondhand store. We tell people that we do it because we don't believe in planned obsolescence, but we really do it because we're broke. So we've accepted less than what we know that we're worth. And at this point, we just want what little we have. Now here comes the savior. Now here comes the group. Now here comes the wave of people who have found the answer. And you can join their group, and you too can get all the spoils of what they're about to do, except they're only discussing the incident. It's just like on the stock market. They're only going to discuss what happened today. The markets went up, the markets fell. The markets went up, the markets fell. It started up here, it ended down here. It started down here, it ended up here. They're only going to talk about an isolated incident because that's the product. You don't have to buy the Constitutional Republic. That's the third-party idea in the cloud that's sitting up above everyone that no one can attain. But it's out there. You know that it's there because people talk about it. And so what you're buying is participation in the revolution. And what comes at the day after the revolution, the stability operations. You could argue that what we're seeing with our domestic police forces is preparation for stability operations the day after the revolution. How many people are going to get killed? You know, these fake revolutions started out peaceful. In Serbia in the 1990s, it was peaceful, nonviolent resistance. Nobody died. Look at the Ukraine. Hundreds of people have died. They're getting a lot more violent. People say, well, it's because everybody's sick of it. I've got a friend who likes to use this analogy. She says, you know, if you poke someone in the chest and keep poking them and poking them and poking them, eventually they're going to grab you by the finger and demand that you stop. I said, absolutely. Because if somebody's touching a part of you that they know is sensitive and they keep poking at it and poking at it and poking at it, they're going to get you to follow whatever it is that they're saying. And how they flip that around, because you would think that that person would walk away. You'd think that that person would get away from the guy poking them in the chest all the time. Eventually it hurts. You know, they're poking the same spot for the last 10 minutes. It's starting to wear on you. It really hurts in that center of your chest. But instead of walking away from that person and getting away from the poking, we instinctually get up in that person's face and fight back. Because our person, who we are now defending our right to exist. How dare you continue to poke me in the chest? Who do you think you are? That's why shock jocks make so much money and they're so popular and it'll never end. Because they are able to do that on a daily basis to their audience. And their audience, who has such low self-esteem, instead of turning the radio off, because remember, you always had the right to hang up the phone. Instead of turning the radio off, they will listen. They will listen even harder. They'll go back and listen to recordings. They'll study their move, everything that they do, because it touches a deep part of them. And now that celebrity, that person, that shock jock is now a part of them. And in order to get rid of the shock jock, they would have to get rid of a part of them. So now they've got a symbiotic relationship going on. That's a lifetime customer. It works. That's why politicians and musicians and celebrities, they're not worried about being exposed or having a compromising photo released of them, or a very public, very destructive divorce, or any kind of scandal. There's no bad press. If people are still thinking, Miley Cyrus is making a lot of money off of what she's doing. And the reason why is because show a sign of weakness, it's part of the sales pitch. Now, some of the weaknesses that we've seen in our culture that come out are pure distractions. And we see this because they bring no effect to change. That is the defining factor of whether or not the information you have is good. Is it affecting change? Change that benefits you. Not just change arbitrarily, okay? Not like the change that Obama said when he was speaking about trying to get become a president, and he's telling everyone that change, we need change in America. That's an idea whose time has come. You finish the sentence for him. And so now he becomes whatever you project onto him. That's what the fake revolutions do too. It's the Delphi technique. But it's used in a way that you don't even realize you're doing it. You think that it's your idea. You agree with that. You're sitting around with your buddies telling your friends, hey, you know, we're going to have this revolution, and everything that they talk about when I'm in the group on Facebook, or when I'm following the founders of this revolution, when I follow them around on radio and I hear them speaking and everybody in the chat room is talking, we're all in unison, we're all in accord. Now we've got groupthink. That is extremely powerful. Why? It's the same thing that happened in the caveman movie that I was talking about earlier. Whatever that guy did to ensure that he became lunch for the lizard, everyone else is not going to do. So we're going to look to the best of our group. And whoever's in our group, we're going to look at the guy who's the most successful, or the girl who's most successful, and we're going to emulate them. And so we're not doing this of our own volition, even though we think we are, because this resonates deep within us. We write to our favorite radio host or our favorite musician or our favorite television broadcaster, and we say, that thing you did, that thing you said, that music that you put out, it touched me in such a deep way. And I'm so grateful to you, and I'm going to be a loyal listener and a loyal follower from now on. That person is under a spell, and that person is giving away their power. It's absolutely it's a sign of intelligence. Let me change what I'm about to say. It's a sign of intelligence that we listen to other people and we make up our own mind. But like I've been saying, it's also a sign of intelligence that we do not react to anything, because it's not that dire. Unless you're in a situation where someone's got a gun in your face and you know you've been taking karate and you know that if you just get that guy in the right position, you could drop kick him and turn that gun around on him just like you saw in the movies. Unless you're in one of those kind of situations, there's no need for theatrics. You can sit back. You can think about it. You can take a day or a week or a month. It'll be fine. When it comes to what's going on in the Ukraine, this is emotionally charged, and there is no logic or reasoning happening at all. Because if there is any logic and reasoning happening, then it wouldn't be pulled off. And it wouldn't get to the extent that it is. And it wouldn't be threatening huge superpowers and wannabe superpowers. Russia has the means, and they have untapped resources. And if they were to go ahead and develop their country, they would be unstoppable. The U.S. doesn't want that. And a lot of other countries don't want that. The EU doesn't want that either. They don't want a country that is not under their system to have that much power. So what are they doing? They're not going in and invading like they used to. They're going into the countries that are outlying areas, strategic areas where they can control import and export. And they're destroying the governments in those countries to ensure that the person who is running that little area, and it may seem insignificant to you and I, but if they are putting that much effort into it, it's important. And they make sure that their guy that they put in there is doing their job. Now, I thought it was funny that in Egypt, Mohamed Morsi was put into power, and a year later he was fired. And now he's going on trial. Because that's what it means when you get fired. When you play that sort of game, it has all kinds of consequences. See, Bill Gates wants to facilitate consequences because he knows it opens the door for more monetary opportunities. You and I stay away from consequences because our parents and everyone else around us who had an assumed stance of authority because we believed that they were an authority told us, don't do this or that's going to happen. Don't do that or this is going to happen. So we stay away from consequences. We follow the line. Wealthy people, CEOs, they create consequences because that opens up opportunities, and then they can make more money, or they can make contacts, and it'll lead them to other people that they can create other consequences with, and on it goes. The consequence of what's going on in the Ukraine and in Venezuela right now, and what is going to be brought to a theater near you here in the United States, is the new foreign policy for the United States. And people say, well, if they're doing it over in other countries, and they're trying to gain control over those other countries, what would be the purpose of having it done domestically? The purpose of having it done domestically is that they can change the entire government structure in one shot. It's a lot easier.
Maybe,
think about what you
can I also bring an element in here. Of course, we're talking about the institution of the world government. Now, in order to have a world government, you need to have every single government in the world on side with it. Ergo, whichever government is not on side with the New World Order, I think will wind up having these little quote unquote revolutions, won't they? They'll have all these little manipulative things, and they'll wind up having all of these dictators and whatnot put in power who are probably just as much at the behest of the World Bank and IMF and globalist New World Order as anybody else. And it's the only way they can actually make it work is by eliminating their competition. It's like a corporate takeover.
It is. And it's fueled by this little marketing tool that they figured out a couple of decades ago, and I'm kind of downplaying it a little bit. It's been around for a while. It's that all-seeing eye in the pyramid. That is a brilliant marketing strategy. Never show weakness unless it is advantageous to your sales pitch. They put that out there. They don't give you information about what it is. And then they decide to give you a little bit of information, but it's sort of kind of like that idea whose time has come. It's sort of open-ended, and you can finish their sentence if you'd like. In fact, most people have finished their sentence. Most of the ideas that we have are not based in fact. They're based in supposition and theory. I hate to break it to you guys, but just because someone shows up at a meeting does not mean they're doing anything nefarious. It means that they have shown up at a meeting where nefarious actions are being taken place or being plotted. But there's a difference between having evidence of wrongdoing and assuming that there's wrongdoing based on association. And that's where the waters get muddied. And that's where good information gets thrown to the wayside. And that's why mainstream media has turned into disinformation and gossip columns. And unfortunately, other sources of media have taken that model and used it as well. It's a lucrative model. It is an extremely lucrative model. It makes rock stars, it makes celebrities, and it works well for everyone. And so if they give you this symbol and they put it out there, and everybody's got instances and stories and theories, and there's some truth out there, I'm not saying that Satanism and child endangerment involvement with Satanism does not happen. It absolutely does. Absolutely it does. But the answer is a lot simpler. And it's really, really easy to see. Everyone, when I started writing in alternative media, and everyone was talking about the RFID chip being implanted in your hand or in your neck or in your whatever. I thought that was ridiculous. I still do to this day. The reason why I think it's ridiculous is because as an investigative journalist, when I look and see what's actually happening with these corporations that are using RFID chip, they're doing something different. See, it's just like Catholicism. There's a version that everybody else uses, and there's a version of it that they use in Vatican City. And the guys down at the bottom who are tithing and participating in Catholicism, they don't know what's going on over there because it's a different version. It's like the mystery schools. It's a different version. What you see is one version, and it's a big distraction, and it keeps you in line, and it makes you feel certain things, and it makes you do things on impulse, and it makes you react. And that's fine, because as long as you're doing all of that, you're never going to figure out what's going on over here. While everybody is worried about getting implanted with an RFID chip, nobody's paying attention to the fact that it's in so much of our jewelry and our watches. And it's not just in your phone anymore. Google is coming out, and other companies as well. I've written about this twice in 1 week, because the trendy new RFID wearable technology jewelry, and it's out there. And people are buying it left and right. Just like they ran out and bought the Apple iPhone 5S 2 weeks after it came out that the NSA was spying on us and using trunk identifiers and metadata in order to do so. And here were these people who bought this phone and used their thumbprint or their first fingerprint or their palm as identification. Well, we know that the NSA is tapping into our phones, so you're going to hand them over your biometric data? Yes! And you're going to spend $300 in order to do it? Yes! Why? Because you're their customer. You're a lifetime customer. You might see it in the news, but it's not real. This over here is real. You know, it's sensational. It must be real. They put this video out, and then they take it away. And then some people can only find it in certain places. And you do this on purpose. It's to create scarcity. It's to create an uproar in the audience, in the customer base, that, oh my God, certain things are happening. Whether they're happening or not is inconsequential. The truth, out the window. What you believe, what you are personally invested in, that's what matters. So someone that you're listening to can tell you to your face that they're lying to you about how many bankers have died, and you won't even hear it. Because you think that they are an authority, and because you are personally invested. And so you're constantly picking and choosing information that validates your opinion, validates your belief. Because if you come into contact with information that does not validate your belief, then you have to reassess your own personal paradigm. And very few people take the time to ask themselves who they really are. You know, it reminds me of right in the middle of the never-ending story, when a character Atreyu goes to look into one of the mirrors in that blizzard and sees that he is the character, the little boy reading the story. That's his reflection. That's who he is. And he runs away screaming. It's because we have a trouble facing who we really are. Because who we really are is not what we think. We are constantly wearing a mask. We're constantly pitching ourselves to each other, validating. That's what a date is. It's a job interview. It's a begging session. Will you love me for the rest of my life? Sure. I don't know you, but I'm in love with you. That's what we see in the movies. People go through some traumatic incident, and then they're all of a sudden in love. What they don't tell you in the movies is that there's an adrenaline rush, and it's mixed with chemicals in your brain that are make you sexually charged. I'll put it that way. It's not love. It's that you're really glad that you didn't die and you happen to go through it with this person. And so now you have this bond with this person. And in about 3 or 4 weeks, when they really get to know you or you really get to know them, you're going to realize that that idea that you had about that person is not who they are. And you're going to feel disenfranchised. And so you're going to break up with them or divorce them after, you know, X amount of years. You're going to go through a crisis, leave your family. Because you made a decision a long time ago that you didn't really mean because you were under the influence of one of four things: drugs, alcohol, rage, or fear. And you were making an emotional decision about your life. And we do this with the job. We don't create the people that we want to be.
Well, to a large extent, you're right. I think that the things that happen to you actually create the person that you are. And it's kind of like your way of how to deal with it. I was talking with a couple of my friends who dropped over last night about doing this broadcast, why I do it, and that kind of thing. And am I playing the victim? And I said, well, you know what? Actually, to a degree, yes, I am a victim of the system. Okay, however, instead of doing nothing about it and just whinging about my victimhood, I use that trauma as a tool, as a motivator to go out and expose scumbaggery, right? To make sure, or at least to help in some way, any way that I can, that people who are potentially the next victims of the system perhaps won't be. And even if they do wind up becoming victims just like me, I'll show them what I have done. I've learned to cope with it, and I've learned to use that trauma as a weapon against those who would traumatize others and hopefully protect people from scumbaggery.
Well, absolutely. That book, From Dictatorship to Democracy, the book in itself and then the 198 Ways to Topple a Government Using Nonviolent Resistance, that in itself is not a bad thing. It is a tool. Who uses it and how it's used is where the moral, ethical issue comes in. Right now, it's in the control of people who are using it for U.S. foreign policy. That's a bad thing. That means that seriously, and probably as a overall rule, be careful about where you protest. And be careful about what you join and the groups that you belong to. Make sure that you're making a conscious decision. Because if you're making an unconscious decision, you're constantly in that emotional state. And you know, because you're in that emotional state, if you take a step back and you ask yourself, why was I getting so upset? Or why was I so happy? You'll start to realize, I'm being influenced by something that constantly puts me in a state of high, intense emotion. And that is directed to a specific goal. The longer they can keep you there, the longer the length of time that they have to get from point A to point B. And there's honeypotting all over the place because they need new recruits. In order to have a full-on protest here in the United States, like they're having overseas, they're going to have to get a large number of people. And so there are people out there right now who are recruiting for this cause, telling people whatever they need to hear in order to get them to go. If they have to abuse the listener, they will. Whatever it takes, whatever base need they have to apply to their pitch to get that product sold, they will do it. And they are doing it. There's a coalescence right now, and it creeps me out. Because nobody is talking about the day after the revolution, the day that the stability operations come here.
It's funny you should mention that, because that's exactly what I was thinking over the weekend. I heard a couple of people talking about revolution. Maybe they don't realize that the word revolution means to go in a circle, right? And you know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of a Gary Larson comic. Have you ever seen the Far Side series?
Yes.
Funny comics, eh? And says the first guy who invented the wheel, and it's a caveman who's got a giant stone wheel, and he strapped himself to the outside of this giant stone wheel, and he's about to roll himself down a hill and crush himself over and over again. That's what revolution is, ladies and gentlemen, as the elite would want you to see it.
That is perfect. That's a perfect visual of what is going on.
Yeah, it's like, I'm going to invent a new form of transport. It'll crush me as soon as I start moving, but hey.
It doesn't matter. The day after the revolution, that's not part of the product. That's why they don't talk about that.
Yeah.
That's not what you're buying. You're buying the revolution.
That's the reason why I'm always tentative about these kind of things. And in fact, I think the New World Order actually have a brilliant scheme about doing things very, very nice and slowly, so that barely anybody notices the difference until one day we're all living in freedom and tyranny's been exposed totally and gotten rid of. That would be really quite nice, don't you think?
Well, that the reason why they're so patient, and we hear that all the time, the New World Order is so patient. How could people be that patient? This is...
Because they're not people, or at least not normal people.
Well, absolutely, psychopaths are not normal. Mm. There's something wrong in their brain. There's new connections that other people don't have, and they don't have empathy to worry about. So they don't care if you get hurt. It's like lightning.
They usually enjoy it.
They do.
My wife was talking yesterday. She hasn't got her car registered. So, like, if you get pulled over by a cop in this country and you don't have your car registered and you haven't paid for your fuel miles in a diesel vehicle and what have you for a van and everything, it's like a $600-$700 fine, something along those lines. And she was driving home the other day. By the way, if any listeners are listening to this and they want to donate us like $500 or something like that, so we can get her vehicle warranted and registered, so this doesn't have to happen to her again. Let me finish the story first. She was caught behind four cops, all right? Separate incidents, driving behind police officers who were going really, really slow. And she's sitting there in the car freaking out about whether or not they are going to pull her over and give her this massive fine when we can't even afford to frickin' buy food and whatnot, you know? That's the kind of stress that she was under. And she said to me, you know, if the cops had pulled her over, she would have cried and gone out of control and you know, tried to appeal to their emotions and what have you. Please, I'm in a really bad place right now. Don't give me the fine. And I said to her, if it was a psychopathic cop, he not only would have given you the fine, he probably would have enjoyed watching you cry. And he probably would have given you an even bigger fine and made something up just to make you cry even more so we can enjoy it. That's how bad these people are. And I'm not talking about like, oh, it's all cops and what have you. There are psychopaths in every type of industry that has power, okay? Cops have power, military has power, politicians have power, business people have power, lawyers, doctors, religious leaders, all of those people have power and control over others at certain points and certain people. That's what psychopaths crave. They crave suffering and power and control, you know, over other people. Of course, they don't like to suffer themselves. That's why they always, try to pursue pleasure, I think. Now, Suzanne, do you have a quick point we've got to do? We've got to take a break. In fact, we skipped the first hour break because what you were saying was just so compelling.
Well, thank you.
I'll take that as a no. You don't have anything more to say. Okay, let's go to a break.
but no, we'll continue on the other side.
Yeah. But before we do, I just wanted to read out one thing as well. Over the weekend, I kind of started to get pretty angry with the mainstream media and alternative media in this country. So I have declared war. Okay. Some of the mainstream media and blogosphere in this country are manipulating us and getting away with it. The few precious sources that refuse to participate in this sort of psychological warfare and scumbaggery for their personal benefit are under attack too. I will not stand for this mistreatment of the people, the truth tellers, and freedom fighters any longer. I will come to the aid of those who need their stories told if they ask for my help. This is fair warning to all mainstream and alternative media manipulators. It's war. I will take you all on single-handed if I must, to protect my people, my nation, my world, and my very soul from your influence and scumbaggery. Who has the courage to stand with me? We'll be right back after the break, ladies and gentlemen, at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. Don't you go anywhere.